Welcome to another edition of Respond to Resilience. On this episode, Dr. Stacey Raymond and I will be speaking with Eve Buca, the Executive Director of Stand Fast Alliance, about how they empower first responders, military, and their families with tools, training, and resources that they need to face the unique challenges of their service with strength and resilience, right after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilient strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Lumley, LCSW, EMTB. And we'd like to welcome our special guest, Eve Buca, today. Hi, Eve.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And I wanted to thank you so much for the valuable service that you guys provide. I think the podcasts are wonderful, really relevant and very approachable for people.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eve. We appreciate that. Let's just talk about you for a second. You are the executive director of Stand Fast Alliance. And so your family is kind of steeped in tradition and also full of responders and military veterans. I guess your grandfather, your father, and your husband were all proud members of FDNY and military veterans. And Eve, you hold the rank of honorary battalion chief within the New York City Fire Department. So that's quite impressive. Eve was married to her best friend, Ron, for 23 years, and his death on 9/11 is what led to the creation of Stand Fast Alliance. The lessons he taught and the influences he had helped shape the work that Eve and others are bringing to the organization today. Additionally, Eve has family and friends in law enforcement and is a military mom. Eve's worked as a registered nurse, licensed massage therapist, heart math coach, and trainer. And after the challenges of 9/11, her focus became centered on providing resiliency tools and training to the members and families of the first responder and military communities. She loves giving back to this community that means so much to her.
So Stand Fast Alliance is a free and confidential 501c3 with the goal of promoting resilient mindset among that military and first responder community. We try and provide information and tools and training that they can use every day. That's the most important thing, and that are cheap, easily accessible, free is even better. Because we all know that life throws us punches, and so our goal or our mission is to help you avoid those punches by creating self-awareness, how to soften the hits that you take by learning how to self-regulate some of your behavior, and then helping you to bounce back and become more resilient from when you take those hits.
So Eve, let's get started with just, let's talk about resilience, you know, what it is, and then if you could share your thoughts on this concept of standing witness and the value of peer connection. So let's start there.
So resilience generally is a big buzzword right now. And it has many definitions if you look it up. The way we define it is the bounce back. It's how you bounce back as quickly as possible from whatever challenges life is throwing to you. So that means preparing yourself mentally, dealing in the moment with whatever it is you're dealing with, and then recovering as quickly as possible. Whether it's in a home situation with very mundane things, or whether you're on the job in an emergency situation, it applies across the board. And personally, if I was queen of the world, we would be teaching this in first grade.
Yeah.
And everyone right. would have this.
Absolutely.
It would go along with first aid training. Mm-hmm. Because everyone needs this, no matter where you live, no matter what circumstance you're in life, no matter who you are, everyone needs this as a life tool.
Absolutely.
So, standing witness is a term that we use for, and I'll speak in my personal example. 9/11 was a big hit for me. I came from a family that really, I was very fortunate. My family really valued resilience and self-reliance. And so it was something that I kind of grew up with. And I know everyone doesn't have that same background. When 9/11 came, I was more fortunate, I think, than some of the other people because I had this type of background and I already had some tools to kind of help me through that whole transition process. Standing witness is for myself as a 9/11 widow, when I meet other people who have had difficult experiences in their life, especially widows, military widows or line of duty death widows, mm-hmm. when they see me and they see that I'm in the world and I'm functioning, it's almost like, as I say, a standing witness. It's like, I can survive this. She did it. I can probably do this too. And I say to them, if I did this, you can do this. You don't feel mm-hmm. like it right now. You don't feel like you can even breathe right now. But you can do this. Step by step, you can do this. So standing witness is just being an example for people who mm-hmm. are in distress to show them, yes, there is light at the end of the tunnel. It does not feel like it, but terrible things can happen and you can find your way out of it.
So I guess another way of saying that is as standing witness, you're an example of, you know, you can transcend trauma. It doesn't
yes.
have to level you. And, you know, that also fits nicely into this whole new field of post-traumatic growth.
It's exactly what yeah. it is. Yeah.
That's a buzzword
yes.
too.
Yes, so. And actually standfast reliance is a direct result of post-traumatic growth.
Mm-hmm.
The right. whole community is my extended family. Mm-hmm. So after this happened, it was so many people helped me. Looking around, I could see because at that time, you started with the military, all of the long deployments were starting to come in. People were dealing with post-traumatic stress from 9/11. They were working the extended shifts. It was very difficult on families. Mm-hmm. You know, all around me, I could see that people were really struggling. And so you take care, family takes care of family. And that's how Standfast was born.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the process, too, is to change our language a little bit. And now I have a friend who loves to say, you know, resilience is bouncing forward because it's kind of a much more positive spin on it.
Yeah.
And Eve, I really admire you for being such an example of strength and resiliency and an inspiration to so many people. I think probably just by your modeling the behavior that you have has really helped quite a few people. And it's outstanding.
Thank you. Again, I'm very fortunate that I had people in my life who were able to kind of show me the way when it was very dark.
with the concept of standing witness, and we talk a lot about peer support, peer connections. So how does that help to open the door to the topic of resilience?
I think there's nothing like a peer. Working with a peer, you go straight to language that you all understand. There's so much that you don't have to explain. There's a commonality in there. You're not concerned about, especially I think when you're in this first responder or military emergency medical community, there are so many things that people are not familiar with outside of the community that they misunderstand, the sense of humor.
We need to do a podcast on that.
Oh, yes. Dallas people are horrified. Yeah. You know, people are horrified, but it's absolutely a fantastic coping mechanism for so many of us. I know for myself, immediately following 9/11, when I had done a couple of reach outs, just to kind of speed that healing process along and to get some extra tools in the tool belt, some of the things that I ran into is people that I spoke with were so much more interested in the, I'm going to call it the drama of the story, than actually what I was asking them for assistance for. Right. So I think it's really important to have, not that there aren't wonderful people outside of the peer community that can help, but I think peer support is just invaluable. I think there's a comfort level and a trust level that comes with a peer that you don't get from outside.
Right. And I think that it's probably one of the obstacles for first responders to seek professional help. They would much rather talk to somebody that understands their world and their language than pick up the phone and call someone like myself, because they don't necessarily know, you know, is this therapist someone that can understand me and what I've been through? And there aren't a lot of therapists that can. So that makes sense, that the understanding of peer connection. So let's segue into, you know, what's the role of family to help people be resilient, help first responders be resilient?
So I think it's, again, I'm going to use that word invaluable again, because I think when things are very bad in your professional life, meaning, you know, you're going out on these calls and generally you're seeing people in distress. They're not calling you out for happy things. You know, they're calling you because something has gone wrong and they're in distress. So to be able to come home into an environment or know that you have the backup when you leave that environment, when you come home, if you're having a difficult time, to be able to know that you can talk with someone or I know for Ronnie, when he was with the fire department and he would have a difficult day when he came home, he would come home, he would say hello, he would change right into his running clothes, and he'd be right out the door. There was no conversation, he would be right out the door.
Right.
Then he would come back, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes later, and then he would be ready to talk.
And that was his transition back home.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So as a family member, understanding that is a necessary transition space for him. He wasn't being rude. He wasn't ignoring me. It's not that he didn't want to talk to me. Mm-hmm. It was that he needed this space of time, and this was his particular way of making that transition from work to home. So I think making families aware of those things can be something that's very helpful and can be less isolating for whoever that first responder family member is. Right.
Yes. Yeah, for the responder, I mean, what you're talking about really is a kind of a ritual or a habit that, you know, we're really good at having a ritual preparing for the shift, but not always good at preparing to come back and kind of reentry into the home environment. Sounds like what Ronnie did was a beautiful way to kind of release and unwind and kind of, you know, decompress from his FDNY shift and then transition into home. So, yeah, that's a very, very great way to do it. So, yeah, we do get resistance sometimes when we bring new ideas, new concepts to the world of responders. So what are some of the roadblocks you found, you know, in your travels that you know, we try to introduce these concepts, and how do you work around it?
What was it? Your guest, was it Lieutenant Ted Stanek had said, we don't like things the way they are and we don't like change.
That pretty much
sums it up.
Yes.
It's amazing to me to see the difference, because I have such a long history with the fire department. The job that my dad was on looks totally different from the job that Ronnie was on, that looks totally different from the family members that I have on the job now. When my dad was on the job, you would never really talk about this stuff. I mean, if you were really having an issue, you go down to the you know, you go out to the bar with the guys after work. Or maybe you might go talk to the senior man. You might, if that person was kind of like an open, approachable person. But it was very much about the macho and not showing weakness and not being perceived as weak. And for Ronnie, when Ronnie was on the job, it was a little bit more open, I would say. And I'll use the example of Patty Brown. So Patty Brown was a very famous firefighter from Rescue One. Very widely known in the job, very well respected. Patty Brown practiced yoga. And he was open about his yoga practice. Now, that is not something that would have been tolerated in my father's firehouse.
So this is what decade are we talking about?
So we're talking the 80s.
Okay.
Now we're talking the 80s. But because Patty was so well respected and really was a fireman's fireman, it was kind of, you would go down to the firehouse and guys would say, you know, Patty Brown does yoga, kind of like testing it out in the air. Like, what do you think about a firefighter that does yoga? But because his reputation was so strong, it was kind of like, Patty does yoga.
Right. It must be okay. It must be cool.
Yes. You know? Maybe there's something to this because he's awesome on the job. Maybe that's his secret sauce. And now, I think post 9/11, that blew the doors wide open. That was a major for the department itself. Guys were just trying, people, I shouldn't say men and women, were just trying to survive on the job then.
Right.
And so they were open to anything.
Sort of like any port in a storm. And it's unfortunate it takes something so devastating like a 9/11 for then, you know, the status quo to be challenged and people to be more open to these alternative, but not woo-woo, you know.
No,
practices.
Yes. Yes. And on the positive side of that, some of them that they would have considered woo-woo before, now, as the years have gone by, we have scientific evidence that are showing, no, this isn't woo-woo. This is actually hard science that's happening here. I think, too, because you have a much younger department now, I think the mindset of the younger members coming into the job, they're used to many more of these modalities. And it's not a negative thing to go talk to somebody.
No. I think that the younger people are more self-aware and in touch with their emotions and how whatever it is that they're going through impacts them. rather than just stuffing it and moving on, you know, to the next challenge. I think the younger generation is really, you know, evaluating, okay, what's happening to me? What am I feeling? What do I do about this?
Mm-hmm. And I think the older members are seeing how it's helping the younger members. And I think the older members who have been trying to deal with this on their own for the past 20 years are now saying, what I'm doing isn't working. Maybe I should try what those guys are doing.
Let's take a very quick break. We'll be back with Eve Buca right after this. So we were just touching on a couple of things in that last conversation, talking about science and how that helps to kind of sell the idea, get a little buy-in from people who might be resisting some of these modalities. And Eve, I want to ask, like, how is self-awareness kind of a door opener for the path to resilience?
So I think it's very common in the community, because we're so task-oriented, and I know this from my nursing career, you are so task-oriented that in order to get the task done, most of the time, you disconnect from yourself to get the task done. Hmm. And then you forget to reconnect back into yourself. Hmm. So how often have you gone for hours and hours only to realize, oh, you know what? I haven't had anything to eat in 10 hours, or I haven't had a bathroom break in 10 hours, which is not a problem because I haven't had anything to drink in that time period either. So I think the first step is reconnecting people with self-awareness, is putting them back in their body so they can actually become aware of these things. And we like to do it in a way that's very relevant, because then it means something to people. So if you're maybe talking to a firefighter and they're putting their gear on, maybe you're talking to them about, take a second and feel how that helmet is actually fitting on your head. Does that utility belt, is that the right amount of snugness that you have on there? Are you actually taking full breaths, or are you shallow breathing? Is your brain back there with some problem that you're having at home? Mm-hmm. All of these little pieces, you want to just take a second to reconnect into yourself. And the more that you do this, the faster this becomes. So it's in a second you can self-assess yourself and then prepare yourself for what comes next.
So how do you get the first responders to start doing that? How do you introduce that to them so that then it becomes part of their routine? So they're checking their equipment, you know, how do you then teach them, okay, you need to check in with yourself, to check up from the neck up, so to speak.
Right. So I think the way that really connects to them the best is you ask them, and language is so important for anyone when you're talking, whatever group you're talking to, language is so important. So you ask them, where's the sticking point? What would you like to be better at in your job? Where would you like to see a little better improvement? Do you want to get more air out of your tank? Do you want to see if you can quiet those butterflies or your tight gut before you go out on the call? Do you want to have better situational awareness? And then we pick one of those things. And then we set that self-check in that situation. So that makes it meaningful and relevant for them, and hopefully it's a cue for them.
Well, I think it's so important to provide like a technique or a routine to drop out of that incredible active mental chatter that we can have. And first of all, become, you know, have that body awareness, but also to make it a routine, right? So you're talking about making this something you do regularly, gearing up for a call, responding to a call.
Repetition.
Okay, so I mean, with anything, any type of skill that you're going to develop, but most people think of like skill as in applied skill to their job. They don't necessarily look at it as, you know, something for themselves. But what we're talking about here, and let's talk a little bit more, Eve, being proactive and not just like, you know, did that call ruin you? Okay, now what are you going to do to help yourself? That would be being reactive. What you're introducing here is the concept of being proactive, getting yourself ready because you don't know what that call is going to, how it's going to affect you. So can you speak more about that?
So proactive, we feel, is the way to go. And proactive prevents so many problems down the road when you just had reactive responses to things. So when you're in a proactive mindset, you're much more open to new ideas and you're much more aware of choice points that you have when you're in a proactive mindset. When the body is in a reactive mindset, the body is just concerned about survival and protecting itself. You can't take in new information. You're certainly not going to learn new things out of the manual right now because you don't care about that. You just care about keeping yourself safe. Your hearing is actually not as well. You're not taking in information when you're stressed like that and you're in at that reactive mindset. And your body chemistry changes. So we like to kind of think of that negative mindset is less options, and using a lot more energy. You are not balancing your energy as well because you're just reacting and not thinking and planning out what you're going to do. When you're in that proactive mindset, again, you're more open to learning. You're better able to communicate, take in and give out information to people. And you're better able to see that big picture. So on the job, when you have people who are in the proactive mindset, it makes them safer because they're more aware of the situations that they're in. They're more approachable. So maybe you're in a leadership position and maybe one of your people is having trouble, or maybe it's your peer who's really having an issue at home or depressed or suicidal. In that proactive mindset, you're more approachable. People can sense that you're more open. You're not going to bite their head off because you're just focused on yourself. So it makes for a better a work environment too. And you're saving energy. So again, energy that you would be expending in a way that maybe wouldn't be organized, if you're able to plan that out a little better, then you're not correcting mistakes all the time. You're not wasting time and you're not wasting energy going back and fixing things.
It sounds like you're creating an optimal mindset for decision making, which is such an important part of being a responder on every level. Yeah, sounds like great tools. And speaking of tools, curiosity. So, you know, children are curious, adults maybe not so much, but in your work, how do you use curiosity?
Curiosity, I think, is the way to go, especially in this community. I think a lot of times we're into self-judgment. when we try a new tool, right away we're like, oh, I can't do this, or this doesn't work for me. Or if you can just hang in there and use curiosity, whether it's a tool that you're using or it's a thought that you're having, it keeps that mind open so that you can not go to those negative places. And it keeps you more focused on the task at hand. So instead of going into that reactive, I hate this, this doesn't work, you can stay in the proactive, huh? Why doesn't this work? I wonder if I did it this way, or if I wonder if I said it that way, if that would be more helpful.
Right. And it sounds like you're, that kind of place you're talking about is being more in the question than rather in the conclusion. Like you're being more curious and questioning open-ended questions rather than this is the way it is, this is reality. It kind of opens the door to more possibilities.
And again, curiosity releases different chemicals within the body than negative reaction does. So the more we can keep our body with body chemistry that's more useful for us, the less inflammation we create within our body when we're having all these negative thoughts and feelings, the healthier it is for our body and the less wear and tear it is on us.
I think also what we're talking about is things that are, we're looking for outcomes with regard to resilience or, you know, healthy mindset that are not very tangible. Really, you have to be in touch with what's going on inside your body, how you feel, how is your breathing right now, what's your muscle tension like. Whereas first responders, you know, if you're a paramedic, you can see if you have the bleeding stopped. You know, as a firefighter, right, you can see if you've put the fire out, or is there still smoke? Do we need to explore this further? It's, everything is external and it's tangible. It's visible. Whereas what you're talking about with resilience is something that you can't necessarily hold it in your hand, you know, so you have to, you're trying to, you know, influence something in internal. So I think maybe with first responders, it's a bit of a challenge because it's not visible. It's something that they actually have to take a moment and go inward and be curious about, like, how am I breathing right now? What is my heart doing right now?
Right. But I think if you can give them the example of, like, we're sitting right here right now, and if I had a firefighter or a military person or law enforcement in front of me, and I said to them, just take a second, don't change anything. That last breath you took, how deep into your chest did it go?
Yeah.
And usually it's shallow, right? Mm-hmm. So if you explain to them, when you take those shallow breaths, you're not getting as much oxygen into your system. So you're not fueling your muscles and your brain as well as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, well, that's something that I want to do. Or if I'm not breathing correctly,
right,
you know, if my shoulders are hunched forward like this, then in order for me to breathe and get that air in, I'm using accessory muscles that aren't made for breathing, which is going to give me headaches and neck pain and the backache. So at the end of the day, when I take off my rucksack or I take off, you know, my harness, I'm going to, you know, hopefully if I try this and I'm more aware of this and I practice this, I'm going to see I'm more comfortable in here. Or I'm going to see if I'm using a tank, hey, I really did get more time. You know, I got more airtime out of that tank than I have in the past.
Right.
And that's why language and examples are so relevant.
Let's take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about heart math.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at FairfieldCountyTRT.
Hey, we're back with Responder Resilience, Dr. Stacy Raymond and Eve Buca from Standfast Alliance. Stacy, I know you have some questions for Eve about HeartMath, so let's dive in.
Yeah, so how do you introduce HeartMath tool, which is a tool that I use with my clients that come in and they're anxious and prone to panic. How do you introduce that to the first responder community?
So initially when we started doing this work, our home was at Friends of Firefighters. And so that's when we had introduced using HeartMath. I love HeartMath with this community because it's right there on the screen. It's not me saying to someone, you know, you look like you might be a little stressed, or you look like your breathing pattern might be off, or it's right there.
It's tangible. So there, now you have biofeedback. The feedback is right there on the screen, which has to be gratifying for them.
And it's science-based, and they can see for themselves, you know, when I use this thought process that I think is helpful for me on the job to help me with certain situations, or I breathe in this way that I think is helping me, you have them try that on the screen. And you see if it actually is the most beneficial for them, or is there another way to maybe do this that might be more useful for them? Mm-hmm. So if you can get them out of the competitive beat the score, it's terrific. I think sometimes with that alpha mindset, people can get very focused on, well, you know, I was in green for this one last time, and now I'm in red, and they kind of lock themselves into that. And so what we try and talk about is them thinking about it as not a test. It's information for them to use. It's an informational tool for them to use. So play with it. Be curious with it. Try these things and see what works for you.
And everybody has good days and bad days.
Yes.
And the other thing with HeartMath is it's not one and done. It's not, you know, you do it for one day, you show, you know, you're showing improvement over that hour where you get it. Now you see, oh, okay, I need to breathe this way. I need to be in this mindset. And now I'm in green being high coherence, heart rate variability, which is optimal for decision making and healing and all sorts of processes. It's something that has to be practiced.
Yes, and that's a bit of the challenge.
It is.
When you say to people, you know, I'm not asking you to do this for a long period of time. HeartMath has these, I just took these out, and you can do it on your phone. There's free biofeedback things on your phone too. They're not as accurate, but that plugs into your phone. Inner Balance.
Connection. And the app is free. And there's a Bluetooth version, and then there's the one that plugs into the phone.
This
and then
is the Bluetooth.
Connects to your ear.
Yes.
Right.
So this connects onto your ear, and then it connects into your phone. Or if you're on the Bluetooth, it just pairs with your phone. Right. And what I'll say to people is pick a time during the day. Mm-hmm. You know, when you first get up in the morning, before you go to bed at night, if you are in an environment that you have the luxury of, you know, every time you go into a certain place or find a trigger through your day. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's every time you walk the dog. Come back, do your heart math for 3 minutes. I'm not asking for a long time. Just kind of get used to coming back into your body and reconnecting yourself, because mm-hmm. that, to me, is the key. If you can just reconnect into yourself and the heart math app makes that easy to see. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I am not connected in. Right. Or, okay, we're good now. And you take that moment, heart math calls it anchoring. You take that moment and you say, what does this feel like in my body? How am I breathing? Where are my shoulders? Am I holding tension? Was I holding it? Was I not holding it? Use that as an anchoring point so that this way, when you don't have the app with you, you automatically start going through that checklist.
Right.
And it's faster and faster.
It sounds like you can harness that sense of curiosity a little bit too with the heart math app.
Yeah. You don't have to be so serious.
Yeah. Have some fun. Eve, you're involved with so many things, and one of them is literally close to home, and I'd love you to talk about it. You're involved with the Resilient Riding Program, and I know some of that is going to take place in the Wilton area. So can you talk about that, kind of talk about the global aspects of it and then the local aspects of it?
So I know that you've talked about the healing connection between animals and people, specifically with Mutt's Mending Mankind. You know, when you're with animals, they don't care what your social status is. They don't care what your work project was like. They just care about how you are with them. There's no judgment there. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different. And sometimes when you can't connect to other people, you can connect to another living thing. And sometimes just being able to connect to that other living thing is a step closer to being able to connect to another person. So we were fortunate to partner together with Rising Star Horse Rescue, which is based in Wilton, Connecticut. I actually am familiar with the barn there. And they were interested in the work that we did, and they're very strong supporters of the first responder community with their Rising Star Responds program. Earlier this year, we were fortunate to pair up with Rising Star Horse Rescue in Wilton, Connecticut, and form the Resilient Riding Program as a give back to the first responder and military community. So what the program consists of is folks can come on up here to the barn and have a 1 hour resilience training with Stand Fast Alliance, to be followed by one of the different choices from Rising Star's Response Program. What we offer is a non-clinical experience, but it's a great way to test out the resiliency skills that you've just learned and learn a lot about horses. So Kelly, can you tell us a little bit about the Rising Star Response Program?
Yeah, we offer quite a few choices. So even people who have never touched a horse, you don't have to ride. You can go on a trail ride. You can take a lesson. You can do some life coaching. We show you how to share energy with the horses. You can learn how to groom them. You can take a common yoga class, either in the field or in the ring with some of our horses. So there's really something for everyone, where we certainly don't want to make anybody nervous. We have horses of all sizes to work with. Really, sometimes people just kind of walk by and they'll meet a horse or look them eye to eye and they'll get a feeling for who they are and they'll want to work with that horse. Some people want to enjoy a ride. So It's really where you're comfortable. It's about, again, being with the animals and sharing with the animals.
And this program is free to the first responders and the veterans.
This program is free to all first responders, to all veterans, police, firefighters, people who are on the front lines who could use a relaxing treat. And, you know, sharing some time with these animals is definitely a good way to relax.
And it's a great way for both of our organizations to say thank you in a fun way.
Yes. Yes, we are very, very grateful, and we appreciate all our first responders.
And we hope to see them soon. So what we did was we started a program where we're offering people to come to the barn, have an hour resilience session with Standfast, followed by either a horseback ride, or they can watch the trainers working with the rescue horses. They can just groom a horse. They also have a life coach that they offer. Just be with the horses. So that's the program that we had this year, which I'm so excited about. And I know in Sharon, Connecticut, the Equus Effect, which has been working with the military for the last few years with the VAs, are now opening up into the first responder community also. Mm-hmm. So.
Sounds great. Well, is there anything that we didn't touch on that you'd like to talk about?
Including family and resilience work. I think in the first responder world, there are services that are offered just to the first responders. And I think it's very important that the family members are also included in that, because being a family member brings unique challenges of its own.
Right.
And I think if we can provide the family members with the tools and the training too, then they can better support the responder, which I say is kind of a selfish goal, because if the responder is better supported, then they're more efficient at their job, which makes it better for me as John Q. Public.
Eve, thank you so much for sharing all this that you do with Standfast Alliance. And how can people find you out there?
They can either go to eve@standfastalliance.org or info@standfastalliance.org.
Great. And any social media channels out there?
Yes. Oh. as you can tell, social media is not my thing. We are on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay. Yeah, we got your handles right there.
Okay. And we have a number of different organizations that we've worked with, Friends of Firefighters. And that's open to New York City firefighters. The National Fallen Firefighters Foundation has a wealth of information on their website. So even if you haven't had a loss, there's still very good information that they offer for everyone in general on that website. We've worked with some military organizations also, USU, Uniformed Services University, which started off as a medical military college. And so now their focus is translating research to practical everyday performance for the military. And they have a phenomenal website, which anyone can go to, that's called HPRC Online. And that has a wealth of information. There are so many overlap issues from the military and the first responder community. Mm-hmm. There's wonderful information about sleep and nutrition, social isolation, communication skills, leadership communication skills, which is something that's not really talked about, but is a big issue.
I guess one last question is, what is Got My Six?
Okay. This is another reason why I love USU. So USU has a number of campaigns that they do. And one of their campaigns, which they started in September, was called Got My Six. Mm-hmm. So in military, they use the analogy of a clock. Okay. So 6 o'clock is directly behind you, behind your back. So Got My Six is who's got your back. And anyone can go to the website and download one of those. They have actual kits that they'll send out. And it's a way that you can post in your work environment just a little positivity. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little shout out. And it doesn't have to be woo-woo or mushy. It can be, you know, hey, so-and-so, great meal last night. Or, you know, you do the best cleanups. Or mm-hmm. you do the best training protocols.
Right.
It's just a way to have like a positive recognition so people feel gratitude.
And it's more of a team effort so that, yes. you know, less of yes. an isolated situation. Because that's where I think people start to get into emotional problems is where they feel like they're alone with whatever it is that they're dealing with. Nobody notices what they've done.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. Yeah, they have a lot of terrific information on there. We're looking forward to working more with them in the future. We're revamping our coaching program and trying to expand what we do. So we're really looking forward to working more with them in the future, hopefully without COVID.
Well, Eve, thank you so much for being with us and sharing all you do with Stand Fast Alliance. Wish you continued success. And we want to remind everybody that we are now on Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. It's the Responder Resilience Channel, Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and bbsradio.com. So thanks for joining us. And we want to remind everybody to stay safe and be kind to yourself.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for everything you do.
You're welcome.